Excellent. Well, welcome, everybody. This is the WFRC Budget Committee meeting. Today's date, for the benefit of the audio record, is March 19th, 2019, and we are getting started at 2:08 in the afternoon. As way of introductions and just confirming again for the audio record, I am Sean Milne, chair of this committee, and we'll go to my left and all the way around.
Thank you. Andrew Gruber, Executive Director of Wasatch Front Regional Council.
Mike Bennin, WFRC staff.
Ned Hacker with the staff.
Tina Cannon, Morgan County Council.
Jeff Sosby, Mayor and WFRC Council Member. And Vice Chair, I guess.
Yes.
Lovett, Bob Gardner, Chief Financial Officer, Wasatch Front.
Jeff Scott, Box Elder County Commission.
Bob Stevenson, Davis County Commission.
I've updated, Councilman Jensen is in Salt Lake County Council meetings right now. And Mayor Caldwell is in, out of town and in some sort of partnering, attracting business meeting out of town, and said he would call in if we needed him for a quorum, but we do not need him for a quorum, so.
Excellent, well thank you. Thanks again everybody. We'll get down to business since we know that we're up against a hard stop for a couple of members. And with that, the first order of business is a review of the minutes from October 11th. If you wouldn't mind, please just review that quickly if you haven't already. And then at the time one feels it's appropriate.
Unless someone has any changes, I would make a motion that we approve the minutes as written from October 11th.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Bob and a second by Tina. All those in favor, well, is there any further discussion? Hearing none, then all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, we'll move right along. So this is the time where it would be appropriate if we had some public on the line or in person to make a public comment. Seeing none, I will call for it as a matter of formality for the audio record. Anyone care to make a public comment? Hearing none, we'll move right along into the next item, which is an action item for agenda item number 4A. Recommend that the council release the draft fiscal year 20 budget and unified planning work program for public comment. Turn the time over to our executive director, Andrew Gruber.
Thank you very much. So you have to leave, Mayor, you have to leave by 3, and if somebody else has a hard stop at that point as well. Everybody.
I'd be a little bit after, but I have
okay.
I got to be back to you.
Okay, so no problem. I just wanted to make sure I understood what the expectations are. Again, we really do appreciate all of you being here with us today and serving not only on the council, but on the budget committee. Of course, doing the work that reviewing and adopting the budget for the agency is a very important thing to do. We on our staff take it really seriously and appreciate your engagement on this and welcome any questions or comments you may have. We want you to be understand what's going on in the budget and feel comfortable with it, okay? If it's okay with you, I would plan to do this. We sent you materials and we also have them hard copy in front of you. What I'll do is give you a little bit on what's the process now and going ahead towards final adoption of the budget. And then we'll explain what the Unified Planning Work Program is and then talk about the budget itself. And I have essentially 4 key items that I want to mention to you with regard to the budget. We'll walk through that. And then that's an action item. And then after that, we have what will be a very short action item on a tweak to our accounting and administrative policy. Okay? All right. So what I got in front of me now is the memo for it's dated March 28th, looking ahead to the council meeting. And I'm gonna start there if you want to sort of follow along with this. The role of the budget committee is working with us to prepare the budget and the unified planning work program. We take it to the council at our meeting next Thursday at 2 p.m. The council reviews it and then votes to release it for public comment. During the period from March through May, there's open review by the public, and we also share it with all of the COGs in the region per our interlocal agreement and solicit feedback from them. And then we bring that back to the budget committee if there's any proposed modifications, and then to the council for final adoption in May. We're on a fiscal year, a July 1 through June 30 fiscal year. We basically have two elements, the Unified Planning Work Program and the budget itself. The UPWP, which is included with your packet, you know, what, Wayne, the 16 pages.
Of summary.
Of summary, backed by many more pages of detail, is a comprehensive statement of all of the things that WFRC either is working on or might work on over the course of the year. It's a federally required plan or program that gives us sort of clearance to utilize our resources on anything in there. So it's written very, very broadly. It is not the same thing as a statement of the organizational goals for the year. That is something that you all remember we do separately, and that we boil down to one page, a key statement of goals. It's our intention to work on those at a staff level first, and then work with council leadership, and then bring those to the council in May so that the goals for the year could be adopted at the same time as the budget and the work program. This is actually a little different than what we've done in the past. Some of you may remember, we typically adopt the goals in August, along with our report on our activities for the past year. This year, we talked about this as a budget committee some time ago. We thought it made more sense to align the goals with the budget and the work program. So that would be a work effort we would engage in and then work with you as over the course of the next few months. I'll go into the budget, but let me ask you, any of you have any questions or comments about the work program, what it is? Or we typically don't spend a lot of time going over it in detail, but we'd be more than happy, if you want, to ask any questions. And that can either happen now, or if you want to take more time and then just follow up with any questions, we're happy to answer them.
Just follow up.
Okay, seems to be the general consensus to follow up.
Okay. Okay, so I'll keep going. If you guys have any questions, let me know. All right, on the budget. So the overall budget, and I think probably the best thing to do on this would be to look at the page. If you flip a few more pages in your budget packet, go to the page that's expenditure by function. We produce our budget actually in several different ways. One shows the source of the funds that we get, which is the first table you have, showing FY18 actual, 2019 estimated, and 2020 proposed. You all seeing that? The next page then is expenditure by function. This is, you know, more akin to what you would typically expect to see in budget materials. Again, FY18 actual spending, FY19 estimated, so where do we expect we'll end this year that we're in right now, and then the proposed budget for 2020. So if you look, the budget, the anticipated total budget at the bottom in the green of expenditure by function from 19 to 20 is actually showing an overall decrease of 4% from FY19 estimated expenditures. What we anticipate is that that's not really where we're going to end up once we finish FY19. At the end of FY19, we do our final accounting, and some of what we actually are projecting now as estimated spending in 19, we think won't get spent in 19. It'll roll forward into 20. Every year we do this, we finish the year, we do a final accounting at our October meeting, and we determine what projects that are multi-year projects did we not complete in 19, and then we move them into 20. It's the nature of our budgeting process, because much of the work we do, particularly the contracts that we enter into, we budget all of them, the full value in 1 year, and then we anticipate that some of the value will roll over into the next year. The reason I'm just starting with that as a big picture is to note to you that we actually expect that our total spending in FY19 won't be $7.9 million. It will come down from that, and some of that will push over. That's a routine part of our budget process. Okay? Now, there's four major things that I want to hit on with you, and I'm going to say, love it, Wayne, Ned, as usual, please feel free to interrupt at any point if you feel like I'm not explaining something clearly or you want to add something, okay? That obviously goes for all of you too, all right? Okay, so the largest expenditure in our budget is for our staff, the salary and benefits. And so you see that line item, salaries and employee benefits,
proposed for FY 2020 at, you know, $4,381 on that expenditure by function page. The we have a current full-time staff of 29 people, and what the budget contemplates is actually adding three positions in 2020. One is an accounting position that we would plan to fill in the second quarter of the upcoming year, FY 20. Now, you've heard me talk about this before. Lovett is going to be retiring over the course of the next year or so. Can't completely talk her out of retiring, but as is her want, she is proposing that what we do is we do an overlap, that we bring in a CFO, a successor to her, and have them work together for an extended period of time, 6 to 9 months, right, Lovett? So that we, sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I didn't think you heard me. Yes, that's what we're planning.
So that we can ensure that there's transfer of knowledge and seamlessness, and then we would come back down. But then, so that would be one position we would fill in the second quarter, and we haven't talked about this, but I'd like to make sure that the budget committee is engaged in the discussion of the CFO replacement when we get to that point. Okay. The second is a planning position.
Can I just go back?
Okay, please.
So, how much of this do you have figured in per month? I mean, are you figuring 9 months worth of paying two people in the same position for?
Yeah. Lovett?
Well, that's what's showing in this budget right here.
We're going to leave it open.
I haven't given them a firm date of when I'm going to retire, but we want to have it in the budget so that when that decision does get finalized, we're able to hire it.
So just hypothetically, let's say like you plan to retire in, the 9 months that we're talking about takes us all the way till next March. Okay, just picking a date. And you know, things are going well. You very well could turn around and say, you know what, I really don't want to come back after Christmas holidays. The new employee understands this perfectly, so I'm leaving 1st of January, not the end of March. Mm-hmm. That's so by doing that, then we would have a 3 months worth of salary or whatever. I mean, right. is that realistic with what I'm asking?
Yeah, if we don't need it, we're not going to spend it.
Right, but I mean, I was referring more to as far as you go, you don't have a set date. So if hypothetically the 9 months was March 31st, a year from now, you could leave 3 months prior to that as far as you're concerned.
Possibly, yeah.
Okay.
I guess I'm not sure.
Yeah, that's no, we could do that.
I'm just trying to see whether or not. See, the reason I asked the question is this: do we need to basically take a whole 9 month period to teach the new person what to do? Can that be accomplished within 6 months? And if you are saying I am not leaving come hell or high water until March 31st of 2020, then would we want to turn around and hire that person 6 months prior to that instead of 9 months? Okay. Because we maybe have duplicate people tripping over each other. It all based upon what you feel comfortable with is what I'm trying to say.
Right. Our auditing firm actually suggested a 2-year overlap. I don't think that we need to do that. So we kind of thought maybe, you know, a year, 9 months would be adequate. It may or may not.
No, that's fine.
Is there anybody in-house that has been kind of cross-training or has any kind of a feel for this position, or is it going to be somebody from completely outside?
Yeah, and that let me just real quick on your point and then to your point, Commissioner. I think what, from a budget perspective, we're budgeting for 9 months. If it doesn't need to take 9 months, we're not going to do it in 9 months. But I get your point. If Lovett says my date is hard on X date, we could hire 9 months out and decide 4 months in, we're good. I think that's unlikely, but we're going to try to navigate this. And I think Lovett will probably have some degree of flexibility.
We've talked about some other options of maybe my dropping to part-time and until the transition is complete. So, I mean, we're looking at kind of all these options. honestly, when I leave here, I want you guys to all be fine. I don't want to, I mean, because, yeah, I want you to be good when I go.
Because you care.
But I don't want you to spend, huh?
Because you care.
I do care.
I know you do.
Well, this place has been my home for 25 years.
If you really cared about us, you'd stay 5 more years.
Amen. She doesn't care that much.
No. You don't care.
She cares, but we're not family.
That's right. And then, Commissioner, to your question, we have an employee, Amber, who is a great support on accounting. She does HR and accounting, but her role in accounting is more as a clerk as opposed to a CFO. So we're confident that we're going to need to bring somebody in from the outside and do that CFO position. Okay. And then, I was talking about the employee benefit line item, the employee salary and benefits, 3 new positions, the accounting position I talked about, which is temporary at 2. Then we are going to have some staff turnover in this upcoming year. One of our planning staff has moved to Michigan to be with her fiance.
It was Callie.
Callie, correct. And one of our longtime planning staff members, Val, is going to be retiring. And so we are taking a step back and looking at what is the mix of positions. It may be that what we're in a position to do is go from 2 people to 3 people at more junior people and accomplish more with less, accomplish more with the same, if that makes sense. So we have budgeted to fill those positions, but it increases the headcount. We're budgeting to increase headcount from 2 to 3 over the course of the next year. Truthfully, we haven't figured out exactly how we're going to do that. So it's budgeting was one thing, and then doing all the assessment of needs is something that will occur over the course of the next few months. The third one is a new position for our TLC, our Transportation and Land Use Connection Program. The growth of TLC is one of the big budget stories that we have. We have brought in new resources for TLC, and we have expanded our staff as well as our consulting contracts. In the staff line item, bringing in additional funding from our Surface Transportation Program, the federal funds that have grown, enables us to bring in an added person that's paid for. So that's what our plan is over the course of the next year. You all may remember, Budget Committee had a lot of discussion about this. We added $150,000 in FY19 in an amendment, and we had planned to do $300,000 in FY20, so this budget's consistent with that, and then it'll grow. The plan is to have that grow at CPI going forward. The only other comment that I'll make about the staff, the salary and benefits line item, is what we're budgeting to do is the same thing that we routinely budget to do, which is have an overall 5% increase. So other than what I've talked about already, a 5% increase that would effectively function as a cap that we would be able to utilize for any COLA or merit increases that are provided, any promotions that are provided, and all the cost of benefits, including health insurance cost increases. We don't know what all of those things are going to be yet. So what the Budget Committee has historically done is said, we're going to set a cap, and then you work within that cap and have a little bit of flexibility to navigate circumstances. We don't necessarily plan to spend all the money in that line item. Lovett does a nice job of being cautious or conservative with the budgeting. So we say, hey, we may be bringing in new people. We assume that they're going to be, in terms of benefits, more expensive, like that they'll be families and have full family coverage. That may not be the case, but we want to be prepared for that. And if we don't spend the money, then we don't spend the money, and then it allows us to carry roll forward into next year.
If you take last year or this year, whichever way, what would be the average as far as the dollars went into that? If there was 5% last year, how many of that 5% dollars was used?
Yeah. Love it. Do you have
what percentage of the 5% went to increases?
No. Just did we? No. What percent of the 5% did we use? Out of 5, did we use 4? Like approximately each year, we don't use all 5.
And Bob, would your question be 2017
to 18?
Yeah,
we used about 4. I think 4.2% last year is what 4. We ended 2. Up using. That included a bigger than what we hoped for jump in our healthcare insurance.
Well, part of the reason I asked the question is that you're going to go around to the COGS and you're going to talk to all the COGS. And so,
let me interject just for a moment. We send the materials to them. We don't actually go and do a presentation to them. I mean, we can if you want us to. Our thought in is that the COGS make appointments from the COG to WFRC for people to pay attention. And it feels a little peculiar to present the budget, you know, to folks that may have very little engagement with WFRC. So they rely on you as the council and then the budget committee. But we will share it with them.
Okay, let me reword what it's.
Okay, all right, go ahead.
I think that one of the things that we need to make sure of is because we, in a sense, and I'm going to use the word compete.
Yes, yes.
But we turn around and deal with cities, we deal with counties, we deal with state government. And I think that one of the things we need to make sure of as we look at benefits towards employees, and that includes salary and actual type benefits, is that we are basically within the ball game with what's going on in there. Because the hard thing is, and then I'm going to use Twilla County instead of Davis County, is that if what we're doing here is a lot more than what maybe is being happening in Twilla County and their cities, we don't want to get pushback.
Yep.
People saying, wait a minute, we're charging our employees more for health benefits, we're giving them this amount of money for pay increases, and you guys are, you know, 2% higher than
everybody. Yep.
Again,
this is a commissioner, this is a great point. And recognizing that what we always do and will do is between this point right now and when we bring the final budget back to you before the May meeting and then actually go to the May council meeting, is we go around, Lovett does this, or Amber does this, goes around to a sampling of cities and counties in our region and inquires, what are you doing on, what are you budgeting for merit increases, for COLA, if any, for health insurance costs? And we go through that process because, exactly to your point, we want to make sure that we are consistent with our members. You know, and typically there will always be some that are higher, there will always be some in some ways that are lower, but we want to make sure that we're in a fair range. So I think that's a great point and we follow this practice. Yeah.
I'll quit asking questions.
No, no, please don't.
No, please.
I actually really appreciate the questions. I'm sorry. Mr. Chairman, you appreciate the questions, right? Sorry.
I do. This is germane. This morning we talked about, as a new team, because we, like several of our peers, have a simple majority that converted, or you know, the seats changed to new members. And the previous commission mix had budgeted for and initiated compensation analysis for several key departments where we feel like there's a significant gap. It's always awkward to address that. We even talked about it this morning on, we don't have the wherewithal to do 100% of all departments and divisions within Twilla County. So we took those that over the last couple of years we perceived to be the most, to have the greatest disparity. So I really appreciate Bob's question. Mm-hmm. I think it's appropriate because in our COG, we have these kind of very discussions when it comes to dispatch fees and the cities who are expected to pay for some of the dispatch fees, questioning the motives of the county when we determine how much our dispatchers get paid and the raises we may or may not give them on merit or those for longevity or COLA for keeping up with inflation. And so I think it's a very fair question. I think at the very minimum, it's appropriate for the political lens of it, as we're all, to Andrew's point, we're each delegates from our respective COGs to be here. I side with him from the perspective of not needing to reinvent the wheel and have them go on a town hall style meeting to the COGS and present it, because I think we've all probably been there in our experiences where folks, they may ask really good questions, but you can get bogged down in a lot of details and now open it up to folks who have not been involved for as long.
Yeah.
And it can be a little frustrating on both sides of the table. So, but you're right, and I appreciate Bob's question. I appreciate your explanation, as I think we all do.
Thank you.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Yeah, and I don't ever want to make an assumption that you all know or remember everything about our budget. Some of you have been doing this budget committee for a while. Others are relatively new, and so please, we always welcome questions. So thank you. Okay, so those are my comments on the salary employee benefit line item. Anything else on that? Or should I move on to the next one?
You have my permission to not check the Morgan County.
Okay.
Since we have no plan.
Yeah. We will send, again, we will send all of this to all the COG members.
This makes me want to cry. Look, they do it right here.
Okay, the next thing I want to mention is the next major item in our budget, which is the consulting line item. And so again, on that expenditure by function, you see it's labeled as contractual. It's the second line there. You'll see again there on that line item an actual presumed decrease in that line. However, if you look back to 2018, you see we're at 1.4 million and then it jumps to 2.4 and essentially 2.0 in 2019, 2.3 in 2020. This is the dynamic that I mentioned a few minutes ago, that $1.5 million of that line item in 2020 is TLC. It's anticipated spending on TLC projects. What we expect is going to happen, actually, is that we will not spend the full $2.4 million in 2019. You might say, well, why do you have it in your estimated 2019 column? Because we don't really quite know what the end spending will be on the in-process TLC projects that we have right now. So what we'll do is we'll end the year, we'll do the final accounting, and a significant chunk of that money, perhaps as much as $1 million, will roll from 2019 to 2020. So you see a level funding, and then in October we'll roll money forward, and then we'll do the same thing again in the future. The way we do our budgeting is when we enter into a consulting contract, we budget the full value of that contract in the year it's entered into, because effectively it's an obligation. But if we don't spend it all, we roll it forward. So there's this sort of permanent, higher than actual expected budgeting and contractual that then rolls forward, okay? We also have other contracts that we do. I mean, part of the bread and butter of our work is through specialized consultants. We have a great technical staff, but we supplement that with specialized consultants. And in the footnotes, there's lists of what we anticipate spending our consulting dollars on. Okay?
Just a quick question on it. So if we carry over, hypothetically, $1 million, mm-hmm. is most of that already going to be spent, though we just haven't? Is that the way it works? Okay.
Yeah, most of it will, because most of it is in TLC projects that have already been committed and agree to. They're just the work carries over from one fiscal year to the next.
So for this next year, it's anticipated that would be $897,000.
Okay.
Approximately.
You're tapping into the fourth thing that I was going to get at, but I'll go there right now. Okay. So on the expenditure by function line, if you look at the FY18, you come to the very bottom and it says amounts expected to carry into next fiscal year zero. Right? Because that's the budget is done, closed for 18. That's how much we actually spent, 5.1 million. If you look at FY19, you'll see contractual estimated spending of 2.4. We anticipate carrying forward a chunk of that 2.4 into FY2020. So we won't spend that full 2.4. Separate from that, if you come down, you see this 897,000 number. That is additional amounts of money across the entire budget that as of right now we anticipate we're not going to spend this year. It's budgeted for, but we will not spend this year, and we will push over into the following year. And this gets at an interesting part of the way that our budget works. First of all, as I mentioned already, we budget what I would call conservatively to make sure that we have adequate resources to cover important needs, employee costs, etc. But we never do a thing where we try to spend down the money. We try to actually be conservative in our spending as we go through the year, knowing that if we don't spend it, we keep it and it rolls into the next year. We sometimes have savings even if it's not anticipated. Like we've had some employees who have had reduced hours this year that we might not have anticipated when we first put the budget together. So we'll spend less there. This is all routine stuff. Now, the other thing that's interesting about our budget is that most of our money comes from the federal government. Some 80% of our revenue, right? Love it. Our funding sources comes from the federal government. So out of our total budget for FY19. Our budget was $8.1 million. About 80% of that comes from the feds. One of the challenges with having so much money come from the federal government is that we can be subject to what's called a rescission. A rescission is when the federal government says, hey, we've allocated money by formula to entities out there, lots of entities, including us, and they say, if you haven't obligated that money, then guess what, we're going to take it back.
So just to be technical, it doesn't have to be expended, it just has to be encumbered.
Correct. Okay.
That's correct.
Correct, thank you. And so right now, actually, there is, unless something changes in law, in Congress, there will be a rescission of unobligated federal funds, and a significant chunk of our federal funding could be taken, okay? We clearly don't want that to happen. And so one of the ways we navigate that is that we obligate more money than we actually anticipate we're going to spend, and then it goes into our budget. So, whereas...
How do you do that? Through members' requests and expected inflation? Yeah, if you'll just
yeah,
give
do
us
you
a
wanna,
real quick...
Wayne or Lovett, do you want to explain the basic mechanics of obligating the federal funding?
And before we get too far offline, I am sensitive to time for the... Well, for Mayor, at least, you've got 20 minutes, yep. So don't feel obliged to go into too much detail.
Sure. When we put together a budget each year, we request that the federal government obligate certain funds to support that budget. During the year, we may have some savings where, as Andrew mentioned, last year we had some employees with voluntary hour reductions. We had a few positions that didn't fill as quickly as we thought they would have, including mine, by the way. still going on. But in addition, we might start out with a consulting project that later in the year we decide not to do, and those become savings. But we've already obligated the funds. So that's pretty much, that's the majority of what you're seeing in that $897,000. Those are savings from previous years. And what we could do is we could say, oh, we'll ask to obligate less funds. Sounds like I'm echoing, am I?
Yes. Yeah, that's because you're coming through on the computer,
we
right?
Mute
no,
the
I'm
phone
not.
She'll
my computer is muted, or it was. Oh, I'm back. Sorry. All right, better?
Yep, here now.
Now you muted up. Both places.
I muted both places. Oh, did you
no,
just?
No,
she muted,
muted
and
her
you
own.
Muted.
There we go.
Okay, you're good right here. Keep going.
Perfect. Okay. So the majority of the 897 represents savings from those two main categories. Now, in normal times, whatever that means, we could request to obligate less funds, but that puts us in a little bit of a precarious position if there's some rescissions that come along. So this year we've opted to sort of leave it there and rebudget it at some point in the future, but it's not tied to the line items above. It's sort of money that the federal government has obligated on our behalf, but we don't intend to spend it this year.
And the mechanics of this, just briefly, we do this through UDOT. UDOT is our pass-through agency, so it's USDOT to UDOT to us. And we do all of this in consultation with the Federal Highway Administration, which is the cognizant federal agency. So it's not so much there's a request to do a particular thing. It's through this process right now that we identify what is our budget. And we actually put additional resources from federal funds in the budget, even though it's beyond what we actually anticipate we're going to spend. And then that enables us to say to UDOT and FHWA, we want to obligate some additional federal funds. Effectively, the way to think about it is it's like we are kind of continuing to carry money from one year to the next, which protects us against the federal government coming in and saying, hey, You didn't budget that money. We're going to take it away from you.
I mean, I think we all get it, and it's a shrewd way. It's a shrewd scheme to make sure that we retain the dollars we think we have. My only worry that I'm sure everybody, on staff has contemplated, especially in attorneys, is there a time when they say, it looks as though it was intentionally done? I mean, it's the rules. The rules are the rules, and they've defined the rules.
Yeah.
We're playing by their rules, but You know, I'm not going to overthink this. I'm just saying it out loud because I just want it to be acknowledged.
We've never been audited.
No, we have been audited lots of times by FHWA, by UDOT, by USDOT, by our own auditors, and everybody says what you're doing is completely acceptable and legitimate.
Because it's within their rules.
So you've never been hit with a rescission?
Yes.
No, we have never been hit with it. We haven't. And here's what, at least as far as I'm aware, maybe many years ago.
I don't remember for sure.
Okay.
We've managed to.
Yeah, so we're always careful of making sure that doesn't happen. Now, I don't think that the rescission is actually going to happen because people don't like rescissions, right? And so there's a way through the political process in Congress that they work something out. But we think it's prudent to take steps to protect ourselves against the possible rescission, which is then why you see, well, we may budget a little bit more than we think we're ultimately going to need, and if we then end up carrying that money forward into the next year, well, that's a completely legitimate and legal, and also it's a way to protect to make sure that the resources aren't, we don't lose those resources. Does that make sense?
It does. Can I ask a technical question?
Could I just add that it's not like it's the staff slush fund. That's not at all how that functions. If we were to decide, or if the council were to decide to spend that money, it would take an action of the council to bring it from that line item to another line item.
So right, that eight, like that
from 897. That
897? That's right.
Right. If say next year we say, oh, we want to do a home interview survey, we want to use those funds to support it, the council could do that.
So it is treated like a restricted fund.
The staff can't do that. I'm sorry?
It's treated like a restricted fund.
Yeah.
The restriction is that without council approval, it can't be used in another line item.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's good. I feel comfortable with it. I just want us to be aware and acknowledge it. Go ahead, Mrs. Accountant.
So this is my first time here, so I haven't seen your numbers for 2017. Mm-hmm. Would this 897 or somewhere in that ballpark have been?
It would have been smaller in 2017. It has grown a little bit.
Okay.
We're trying to manage that, but this year we kind of made the conscious decision not to to lower that number next year because of the potential rescission.
Okay.
So.
All right.
Yeah, and if you want any more detail, you want to look back over the course of years, we're happy to provide you all of that. Okay, no, anything you want. Okay.
So technical question that I've got, if I may.
Oh, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
If, to Andrew's point, like 15, 20 minutes ago, if fiscal year 2019, as suspected, ends shorter than what's expected here, I, as I reviewed this, looked at amounts expected to carry into next fiscal year as a rollover to the rainy day fund or the reserve fund. Sounds like I'm partly right, partly wrong, because this is a restricted fund. The majority of that 897 is for that portion that we just spent the last 10 minutes on. Is that correct?
Or is it on contractual?
Yes. I'm sorry?
Is the majority of the 897 contractual?
The 897 is not contractual.
Yeah, it's totally distinct.
It is totally separate from that. When I do the final accounting for the year, I'm going to know what contracts we still have obligated to pay for, and those will actually roll forward into the contractual line item into FY20. But any savings that we might have had on payroll or any of these other items will then drop down into that carry forward into next year.
Okay, I'm glad I asked.
At some point, the council could elect to budget that differently, and then we could request fewer funds be obligated.
Okay.
That's how that
Not functions. All of the 897, then, is the contractual restricted funds. That's what I was asking.
Yeah.
And I think we picked up exactly what I was asking. Okay. Great, thank you. So if you spend less, it's not like... Yeah, anyway, I've got it in my mind. I want to move forward for the mayor.
Okay. I appreciate you all allowing us to wade through all that, because it is a little confusing, and I think we've got the right approach and right balance on it, but it's something to understand our budget that you need to understand and then to talk about. So thank you.
A momentary just suggestion for staff to weigh and even this committee, but the amounts expected to carry into next fiscal year then sounds like it could be further divided with a sub A, sub B of what is contractual and is encumbered and what might be the aggregate of all the other lines.
Wait. I think what you're saying on that 897.
None of that is contractual.
None of that is encumbered and obligated to be spent in some way. Some of that was in the contractual line item. Some of it was in other line items, but none of it is committed to something. The difference.
None of that makes a difference on the rescission.
All of it could be rescinded, but we have, okay, this is, okay.
So it's all
obligation.
So
there's
I'm
an obligation when we,
by okay. terminology. All right, I'm sorry.
Let me try.
Programmed.
There's one, when I say obligation, I mean we say to the federal government, we're going to pull that money into our budget. From federal purposes, that effectively is an obligation of federal dollars that we are pulling into our budget. All of this money and the whole FY19 line item is all obligated in that way. It's in our budget. There's a different kind of obligation. Maybe I should use different words. We have not contractually committed ourselves to spend the money in that 897. Okay? That's savings, money that we're not going to spend. That's different. And some of that was money that was originally in our contractual line item, but it's not something that we actually entered into a contract with a vendor and said, we will give you this money. That is different.
I'm glad I asked, because that's how I would consider the term encumbered in my mind, was we have obligated it somewhere else, we just haven't paid it out.
Right.
Because like so, to Bob's element about the planning staff, or yeah. the accounting staff with Lovett, we may delay the hiring, but right. we've obligated it.
Yeah.
So
it's a really good point. I'm sorry to cut you off.
No. I just want to be sensitive.
Yep. Yep. So the last thing I'll say, so hopefully this does make sense. Obligating money from the federal government to us, and then encumbering it and how we're going to spend it are two different things.
Okay.
And this, the last thing I'll say on this then is, if you look in FY19, the contractual line item, it's $2.4 million. Mm-hmm. Okay? That is both obligated in that we've said to the federal government, put that money into our budget. And it is also all encumbered in that it is committed to contracts. Okay? So we have signed a contract with Farron Peers to do analysis for the related to the Mill Creek, whatever, you know? Not to be dismissive of Mill Creek's whatever, but and that work's not all going to finish. But we have already entered into a contract. That's going to roll into next year.
So the 2.4 is both.
Yes.
Obligated and encumbered.
Correct.
Whereas we're treating the 897 technically, with a term as correct. Not encumbered, but we've said it's ours. We've obligated it to ourselves.
This is why I hated accounting when I did
that. Yeah.
You know, it's one of these things. Keep looking at the clock. You've got to get over with it.
Okay. I want to be attorney like I told you.
But the 897 is subject to rescission.
Okay, great.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. Last item that I want to point out to you is the effects of the move. And if you're again on the expenditure by function line item, the building operation R&M line item, equipment depreciation, and rent all associate with the move. Of course, the building operation R&M, it goes away because we're selling our building. By the way, closing date on the sale is April 1. Okay? Hallelujah. Timing has worked out so perfectly. So exciting.
I think it's going to happen on April Fool's.
I know.
I hadn't thought of that. Don't say that. Yeah, the buyer's going to be like, just kidding. Then the
that's a 1031 exchange. They'll be there.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. He knows. Okay. Then equipment depreciation. The reason you see that going up is because we did the furnishing and build out of our office space here, and we depreciate that over 5 years. Love it. Is that right?
Furniture over 5 years, electronics over 3.
Okay.
That's how we do that.
And then the last one, the rent item there, of course, that original line item back in 2018 was our mortgage cost. We paid off our whole mortgage, and then you see in FY20 a full year of rent, and it's a full service lease, per square foot, tenant improvements, common area maintenance, everything is part of that lease. I just want to note that some of you have been involved in this for years, We have very carefully planned the financial implications of the move. In fact, we didn't really seriously start looking at moving and increasing our costs associated with moving until we had an increase in federal funds coming in, and through extensive discussion with the Budget Committee that some of you will remember, we set aside a small slice of that increase in funding to allow us to cover the additional costs associated with renting in this space. So we were very, very careful, and I have really appreciated the engagement of the Budget Committee all the way along. I'm just thrilled that once we sell and we adopt our FY20 budget, we'll be done with all of the, like, you know, then we can just move forward and just operate, which is going to be really nice. So you see the implications of the move in a few places in the budget.
Okay, got it. I have a question about depreciation. I was a little shocked at 37%, because I would think that we would have lower, significantly less depreciation when we don't own the HVAC system, we don't own some of that, but see our rent go up. Items like that, I can only assume because I don't have that level of detail, right? But
We sent out a memo back in December, which probably you guys didn't see, but it essentially listed what we were purchasing. 250,000 of it were desks, chairs, conference tables, furniture, storage, you know.
And you've got that as a 5-year depreciation or 7?
That's over 5 years.
Okay.
That's per our accounting policy. And then the audio visual and electronic equipment is over 3 years. That also is per in the history of our policy. We added 250,000 for furniture and 135,000, I think is the right number, for audio visual and telephones, which we may not spend, by the way. I'm trying to think what was in there. And then routine equipment replacement, computers, plotters, printers, copiers, those kinds of things.
Let's say in theory you make your audio, video, your technical equipment last 4 or 5, you're gonna continue to show that depreciation as an expense, so you're saving it up for full replacement?
No, once it is fully depreciated, okay, you don't charge any more to the weekend. That's a rule.
That's the technicalities where I'm just, it harkens the question of, so are you guys building in that you will automatically replace things? I don't think your modality has been that you will automatically, but you're just saying it's fully depreciated, not showing as an asset of value anymore on your books.
But it may still be functional.
But it may still be functional, yeah. And for insurance purposes, it's not fully depreciated, correct?
I actually do keep an asset list even once they're fully depreciated, and that is for insurance purposes. But once it's, you know, at the end, I don't know if you remember our old building, all the old furniture we had from the 70s.
Oh yeah, I think we all did.
We had so much of it, we weren't charging any of the programs for any depreciation on those,
okay,
because they had long since been expensive.
But we didn't say, we've reached the end of our depreciation period, it's time to go buy new stuff.
Right, because
you guys have that modality
pat you on the back for it, but it also explains the huge jump.
Yeah, well wait, there's also, I think, Lovett, correct me if I'm wrong, part of the jump of 37% in the depreciation line item from 19 estimated to 2020 proposed is also the fact that we're doing a full year of depreciation in 2020 related to the new stuff we bought, whereas in FY19 it was only a partial year.
But even looking the year before, you were less than 30. I mean, this is the rationale for the huge jump.
Yeah.
Again, these are just things that I think of how I've had to explain to partner cities in my county as we talk about where their fees come from, or other boards that I sit on where depreciation could be a really awkward sort of thing to explain to folks, because they're like, well, but you're not really expensing cash.
Yeah.
And if you're doing it prudently, you are, because you're booking it off to the side to make sure that you have it for full replacement costs, or, you know, however one entity from another does it, versus just a huge spike. So anyway. All right, I feel good. I just got out in the weeds there and realized I've slowed this down again.
A little bit different between grant accounting and full government accounting. We don't have a sinking fund for replacing equipment. It's all,
yeah. All right, I've gotten us out in the weeds again.
Thank
you for those accounting references. Yes. I'm in heaven.
That's great. So that's, those are all the items that I wanted to specifically highlight to you. I guess I should note that per our practice, the contributions being made by the counties inflate by a 3-year rolling average of CPI, in which case this year is 1.6%. So that at this point is 1.9%. What was that, right? 1.6%.
No, 1.5, I believe. Is there were two of them. That's
yeah, 1.6%.
1.6 was.
Yeah, 1.6 is the counties.
Yeah, okay.
So I and all of us are more than happy to answer any questions you have about anything else that's in the budget, but I've hit the highlights here.
Mayor, how about I defer to you? Sorry, I realize that somewhat refers
to. I don't have any questions. We need to recommend the approval of this.
Yeah, it's an action item where this committee recommends and moves that the council release for review and comment the draft Unified Planning Work Program and budget for FY20.
For expediency, how about the chair entertain a motion and a second, open it up for further discussion, and then go from there.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second to recommend, presumably favorably to the council, the release of the draft fiscal year 20 budget.
And
Unified Planning Work Program for public comment. Is there any further discussion? Okay, hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Let it stand that it's unanimous. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right.
Now, in perhaps a minute, the next item is a proposed modification to the draft accounting and administrative policy. That policy, you may all remember from the last year or two. I'm sorry?
It's just on the first page.
The only adjustment is that tweak that you see in red line on the first page. We, in 2017, did an extensive process to review and update our entire accounting and administrative policy. This change here is just a matter of, Lovett, explain it in a sentence or two, please.
Yes, it used to be required that our budget committee chairman, who also functions as the council's treasurer, have a treasurer's bond purchased on their behalf. Beginning of 2018, the Money Management Council, in coordination with the legislature, changed that rule and said that it could be either a crime insurance or it could be a treasurer's bond. Well, we purchase our insurance through the Utah Local Governments Trust, and what they did is gave us enhanced coverage that took care of that requirement for the crime insurance. So we are no longer required to buy a treasurer's bond, and so we've adjusted the language to reflect that.
There you go.
I move to adopt the policy, as the accounting policy as amended.
Second.
All right, there's a motion and a second.
So this is a recommendation
to the council for the adoption of the draft accounting and administrative policy. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? There is none. Let it be recorded that it's unanimous. All right. At this time, do we need to excuse the mayor?
Yeah, I think so. Here, so my executive director's report is simply thank you very much. We've got our council meeting next Thursday, and I'm going to put into the hand of our council chair and our council vice chair, anybody else who wants it, I don't have hard copies, but we can get them, the draft agenda for our meeting next Thursday, the 28th. So if you would both be kind enough to take a look at that.
I don't have any concerns, but I don't see any right now.
Okay. I'll follow up with you both directly then, just to make sure and see if you have any questions about the content of the meeting. You all remember also, not only are we doing the council meeting from 2 to 4, we're also doing our open house and 50th anniversary of Wasatch Front Regional Council celebration.
There will be cake.
Well, there'll actually be fancy cupcakes, I think it is.
No cake.
While everybody's here,
from 4 to 6 next week.
Can I just ask an opinion question on the agenda? Personally, I would like to see us figure out how much time we're doing on each one of these things. And the reason I say that is so that if, I'm just pointing at you because you're sitting here,
you get up there, you know, you got 15 minutes, and if you're going, my time's up, I got to finish. That's the only reason I think that.
So. Yeah, and you mentioned this already. So you're saying that we would like put on, let's say, the start time, budget committee, 2:15 or 2 whatever, yeah. Or regional growth committee, 3:10, whatever the case may be, to give.
So if we're ahead of schedule, great. If we're falling behind, people know.
That works really well on our commission agenda.
Okay.
If somebody says they've got 45 minutes, they'll take it. If they can do the same thing in 5, it gets done in 5. Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is because if you watch in the meeting, we start to lose people out of that room when we start to get past an hour and a half.
Yeah, true. It
is. And so that's the thing that, and I think the other thing is we don't want the meeting to be to where people are saying, God, I just hate to go to that meeting. I don't care how good the cookies are, I just hate to go to it because it carries on forever. I'm just throwing that out.
I appreciate that. Okay. We'll add times, and what I'll do is maybe we'll put those on there and send it back to you guys in draft and take a look. We always do that internally, and we always shoot to have the meetings end at no more than 90 minutes. And then topics, people like to talk about stuff. So things tend to go over, but having them actually list on the agenda might be helpful in that regard. So we'll put that together and send it back to you guys for a final review.
Sounds good.
Okay?
If you can have Ben do some sort of something like a gong or something to figure over time.
Yeah, that would be great.
Ben would be horrified at that suggestion.
I'll do it.
Yeah.
I'll have to look. Somewhere I have a little I brought home from Hong Kong. It is a little gong, you know, and I ought to look and see if I have it, and we can just tell everybody, okay, just remember when your time's up.
A couple of symbols.
Anyway, I'll see if I can find that. I don't know what I can.
Cool. You're a better chair than that. You don't need a gong.
I know, but at least make people laugh.
You just any questions?
Doesn't it come with a big shepherd's hook to pull you off
stage? Yeah, there you go. Uh-huh. That's what I was thinking. So much kinder than the gong.
So, Mr. Budget Committee Chair, that's all I've got for my executive director's report.
Excellent. Otherwise, we've noted that, staff has noted the next meeting is scheduled for May 9th. Excellent. All right. There is a motion on the floor to adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
No opposed? Excellent. Thank you very much. You. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Jeff, thanks.
I do have a
go talk to the
kind
press.
Of a housekeeping question.
Yeah, sure.